So last week, we were deep in our social commentary bag.
Way down deep in there. It was...
I just wish...
Did you listen? I didn't listen.
Yeah, of course I listened.
Because I just...
Yeah.
I didn't want to go back there.
Yeah, I always like listen because I'm looking for the mistakes so that we can get better.
Yeah.
More so than listening to enjoy it. Like, I'm just like,
yeah.
Let me see what we can do better.
I promise you, first five episodes, I listened every time. Then yeah. I was like,
Yeah. Do you have an issue hearing yourself talk?
I don't love it. Yeah. I don't love it, but I do eventually go back and listen.
Yeah.
But it's never immediately after.
I think you have a great radio voice, podcast voice.
You know, some people have said that.
Yeah, and, no, you sound smooth.
It's the microphone, the technology, I guess.
So I just can't imagine what it would have looked like last week if we tried to transition into the content we have this week. So that's why we had to cut it short.
We struggled.
Because today's show is about AI.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about this in a while. The last time we talked about AI was back in 2023. And it was really like an introduction. Like AI was really just at the precipice of just being something that people knew about. I remember my mom was asking me about AL. I'm like, what is AL? I'm like, oh, you mean AI.
Tell me about this L guy.
Yeah. Just like when Bitcoin came out, someone was like, hey, tell me about that big coin. So now we're past that. Like, I think AI is very much an everyday part of a lot of people's lives. And now we want to talk about how to make money from it.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
When... everybody started talking about AI. I don't know. For me, as a wealth manager,
yeah.
I couldn't help but first think of alternative investments.
That's funny. I never made that connection.
I always now. Made that connection. It was in this order. Alternative investments, Allen Iverson, artificial intelligence.
In 23, I saw a meme. It was like by 2030, AI will replace X number of jobs. And it was a picture of AI, and it was like, why would he do that?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Our points of reference really do age us.
No, that's a fact. That's a fact. Well, can we agree that AI is artificial intelligence?
For the sake of this conversation today? I'm with you.
Okay, not Allen Iverson. Okay.
Or alternative investments.
Now, one thing that I'm finding, I don't know if you're finding this too, I think AI is generally making us dumber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the beginning, I was using it for like complex things or like things like fix my grammar, like rewrite this or.
Yeah.
And now I'm just finding people are using it for dumb stuff.
People are over relying on it and not thinking.
Yeah.
And it's more prevalent to me. Like I'm a thinker anyway, like, and I don't say that nobly. Like I'm probably an overthinker.
Oh, definitely.
Thanks for validating that.
100%.
I'm analytical by nature. Mm-hmm. I analyze everything.
Yep.
I overanalyze and overthink most things. So this is a complete.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite end of the spectrum for me, except. I feel like because of when I grew up, like, I feel like I know how to use it responsibly.
Yeah, you've got an advantage because you have a base level of understanding of most of the things you're using AI for.
Right.
So you're not, like, guessing using AI. Like,
right.
There are people that are saying stuff like, tell me which medical procedure I need. You know what I mean? Like, or tell me... which stock to buy. Like
that.
Yeah. Like you need some kind of medical background if you're going to ask medical questions.
Yes.
You need some financial knowledge if you're going to ask it financial questions.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, like AI, it hallucinates. It makes up stuff.
Like it gives you things in other languages that you didn't ask for.
You got to be able to call BS on AI.
In fact, the first notes for this topic that you sent me, mm-hmm. I promise you, the first paragraph was in Wingdings font.
What?
Have you ever heard of the Wingdings?
Of course I know Wingdings.
It was in Wingdings. I was just like, what is this?
Yo, you know I didn't type up notes in Wingdings.
I know that, but that's my point. I'm like,
wait, what is your point? Like, the AI turned your stuff into Wingdings?
Well, we've put in a prompt and we've gotten results back.
Yeah.
Literally in Chinese.
For sure.
Yeah. I haven't seen another language, but I have seen Wingdings font.
That's so funny.
I don't know. Maybe that's not AI. Maybe that's Microsoft Word.
But. Yeah, I'm seeing young people are doing things like which school should I attend? Like, where should I live?
This isn't that.
Like, how should I pivot my business venture? Like, it's a data point, but it's not the data point. Like, people are like making posts about, I asked ChatGPT, what's the worst school in New Jersey? And like somebody pushed this up and a school that I'm on the board of showed up on the list. And it's like, this is based on nothing.
Yeah.
And people are like relying on this stuff. So today, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that
she's showing me. These are last
legitimate
week's notes.
Wingdings. Like, I'm speechless.
Look at it in your sent folder and see if you see the same
thing. I did not send you no Wingdings. That I know for a fact.
I don't even know if that's what this is. Like, but it's just the first paragraph. That's the thing.
That's hilarious.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So today we're really talking about how to make money from it because it is becoming more and more prevalent. And like, I don't want you as the listener to miss out. We want to make sure our clients don't miss out as well. And so we're going to go kind of deep into this topic of what are all the ways you can make money from AI? Because, you know, newsflash, is not just from buying NVIDIA stock. Like,
word.
There's a lot of ways to make money from this. And then we'll talk about whether this is a bubble or not. Because there's been a lot of technologies that we've seen in our lifetimes that, you know, they are really, really popular. And then sometimes the investments kind of fizzle out for a while. Like, yeah. I could think of a couple. Like, the internet is clearly one.
Of course.
Marijuana is another, where you've seen a lot of people rush in and then people get burnt and lose money. And you don't hear about that.
Yeah. But it's also our jobs to protect people from themselves when they want to go all in on something that, you know, isn't really proven.
Yeah. So let's get into some stats, as we always do about this time. So first, AI adoption. 78% of organizations, this means companies, businesses, public and private, are now saying that they're using AI in at least one business function. 78%.
Wow.
In 2024, AI investment reached $109 billion by private companies in America.
Oh, yeah.
And revenue from companies who are providing AI infrastructure has risen by $400 billion since 2022.
Wow.
Like, we are really, really investing in this stuff. And it is being used widely and pervasively.
Yeah, let's take a step back to the stat you shared about the organizations reported using it in at least one business function. So at 78% in 2024, but just a year earlier, that was 55%.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a 25 to 30% increase in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure a year from now, it's going to be more like 100%.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the pace at which.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The adoption is pretty telling.
Speaking of adoption, what about in the gray household? What are some things that you might use AI for today?
Researching podcast topics.
Okay. Okay.
That's not squarely within the gray household, right? Most of the time when I'm using it in the household, it's to show my children who think we don't know anything about technology that this technology that they claim they are so much more knowledgeable about, that when they ask us questions, that they can use AI to ask those questions. Right? So
you're saying to your kids, don't ask me, ask AI, ask chat?
I'm saying instead of yelling at me because I didn't answer the phone, because they are both in this.
Oh, okay.
Mom,
you're like, look,
I'm away now.
Yeah, I got you.
I'm like, you could have figured this out.
Yeah.
And
like,
it's
what?
Not,
give me an example. Something they hit you up about.
So my son is, you know, stepping into independent living, and I needed to send him some things by certified mail with the signature.
Okay.
And his question was, if they deliver it, so he asked for the tracking number. That's fair. He said, but what if they come to deliver it and I'm not home? How do I get it?
Yeah.
So I said, they're going to leave a note, literally a sticky note on the door, and you'll have to go get it from the post office. Do you know where your post office is? I think so. Well, how do I know what time they close? And I'm like, you're asking me too many questions. So he go, I said, you know, you can Google this stuff. He's like, yeah, but then I got to type it. And I'm like, do you know there's a, so
then
that's lazy, right? He's like, yeah, who has the time to type all that in? I'm just like, dude, you need these documents so you can work. Like, you ain't got nothing
to do.
You
can talk it. You can talk it.
I'm like, you can, you know, there's a voice feature.
We are so lazy.
Yeah.
Does he not know that you had to go to the encyclopedia back in the day?
Listen,
and the dictionary and
go
the thesaurus?
Find a map or, but it just made me aware of how they're my children who are bright human beings don't have the foresight to even use it in a way that's helpful to them.
Yeah. But what's funny, so your son went to college at a time when AI kind of became more like more common later.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's not relying on it as a crutch, which I bet.
He's also a creative.
Yeah.
And so creatives have this thing
they don't
about
like it.
Don't mess with my art.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if someone is creating music using AI, that's offensive to him. So that's fair.
Now, your daughter, on the other hand, she's right in the middle of it. Like,
she's right in the middle of it. So here's a recent example of how she used it. We had a celebration for her graduation, college send-off. And I said, you cannot do these three things until you write your thank you notes. You need to draft them. You need to use Canva, whatever platform you want to use. You need to create your own thank you card. Well, she's like, I don't know what to say. And I'm just like, I just stared at her. I know that she used... probably ChatGPT or something else to inspire the words that she put on her thank you notes. I'm okay with that, though.
Find my thank you note and see how poetic she was. And then I'm going to call her out. Like, you ain't write this.
I haven't sent them yet.
Oh, okay.
But they've been created. They've been printed. The envelopes, I had to order envelopes to get them out. But you'll see.
Yeah.
I was like, but I knew they weren't her words. But I also can appreciate that she didn't use the output verbatim.
Yeah.
It, but she used it to inspire her on what to say. And I was like, and it was much more poetic than she is as a person.
I imagine if I'm Hallmark, I just fired all my writers. Like the people that write the cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine that they're gone.
Maybe.
Some of the use cases that companies are using AI for today, it's customer service, medical diagnostics, which is scary, logistics, fraud detection, and computing infrastructure. So like they're using it in tech to like design chips, to write code. It's a lot. So now ChatGPT is attracting nearly a billion users per month right now, which is rivaling
how many billion?
A billion, one. I think there's only like how many billion people on the planet? Like a billion in a month is crazy.
That's bananas.
Yeah.
That's unique. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
That's analyzing Andrea again. I'm like, unique users?
So let's get into some economic forecasts. So PwC believes that AI could add up to $15.7 trillion to the global economy, which represents a 14% increase in economic output compared to a scenario without AI.
I'll take it.
Goldman thinks $7 trillion over the next 10 years. And McKinsey thinks $17 to $25 trillion of additional economic output.
Mm.
Yeah, so this thing is, it's getting up there.
Yeah, I think I don't worry as much about AI replacing jobs. I do think how we all do our jobs will change.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not worried about I mean, we have this conversation all the time about, you know, people tell us in our industry we're going to be replaced by AI. No one needs financial advisors, but yeah. I disagree.
Yeah.
I think how we do our jobs, we have to adopt it in order to compete, but most people aren't coming to us for things that they can get from
a
robot or data alone. It will work for some people.
Yeah.
But for the clients that we prefer to work with, it's really personal and it's about the relationship, not the transactions or the investment.
Yeah, well, part of it alone is it's not all the way done yet. Like, it's still getting better and better.
Sure.
You know what's funny, thinking about technology that was shaking things up? Clearly the internet was supposed to kill our job, right? The internet, when people could trade on their own, people said, oh, why do I need a financial advisor now? I can trade. Like, I remember Merrill Lynch dropped Merrill Edge. Really, originally it was Merrill Lynch Online was the first version of it. MLOL.
That's right.
And people thought our jobs were going to go away. And like, clearly we're still here 25 years later.
Yep.
And you don't know this, but
they're still there.
There was a time when like Excel came out and like Lotus Notes came out and folks thought that that was going to be the end of needing all kinds of people to work in finance and accounting. And it's just a productivity enhancer. And so I kind of look at it, AI the same way. And that's what most people think, is that AI is going to be a productivity enhancer for the high-skilled worker. And it definitely, it'll help the lower-skilled worker as well, right? Being like a place where I can go and get answers that I could then relay. But I do think that there will be some jobs replaced. And like the scary thing about AI is the idea that, you know, as it works its way up the food chain, the caliber of jobs that get replaced, because I think there will be some job replacement. Like some conspiracy—
Yeah, I'm not saying there won't be any.
Yeah, some conspiracy theorists think that it will cause huge spikes in unemployment because of so many people losing access to jobs that we will have no choice but to move towards universal basic income in America, like where everybody just gets a check, like communism, like socialism, like that's where things are headed. Like, I don't know. Like, I hope that that's not the case in my lifetime.
That's dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, we're already, not to be the downer today, but you know, we're already on the brink of civil war, it seems. So something like that could, that'd be really interesting. Did you use Lotus Notes? Did you learn Lotus Notes?
So my dad, like, so Excel and Lotus Notes are kind of like cousins. So when I was learning Excel, my dad was already like very facile in Lotus Notes. And so he kind of taught me the beginnings of Excel. And then I took it way past him.
So at that time, Lotus Notes was the first spreadsheet application that I learned.
Yeah.
So in the middle of college, I mean, we were both En-ROADS interns. My sponsoring company was using Lotus Notes. And then I went back to school, which sometimes lagged in technology at the time. And by the time I graduated, it was all about Microsoft Excel.
Yeah.
So I just remember learning both because that's the time that I came up. I just,
we'll have Lotus Notes as an accounting major.
No.
We'll have it put on your computer.
Absolutely not. I don't know. I just remember.
Yeah.
I remember the transition. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. We also remember like computers before they had like the GUI interface, like the graphical user interface where you could like click on little pictures.
Yeah. GUI. Yeah. No, it was definitely DOS-based.
You would turn it on and it would just be a blinking little hyphen, and then you would type stuff, and that's
DOS,
how
disk operating system, floppy disk, all of that.
Yeah, we remember that.
That's how I. Yeah. In fact, Lotus Notes was the version that I learned. It was that.
Yeah.
It was like WYSIWYG. Remember the literally, if you wanted to print screen, it's kind of like what you see is what you get. I was like WYSIWYG. Yeah. Like that's what we're calling it. I'm like, wow, it's an acronym.
Yeah.
I'm just showing my age. Just like
you remember macros.
I do. Sad.
No one knows what we're talking about, but like macros were these programs you would write to like screen scrape stuff.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I'm stuck in a time warp in some cases, trying to figure out where Shea Stadium is.
That's funny. City Field, man.
I know. City Field. I know. But it was just
yeah.
I mean, I've never been to a Mets game before.
So we're talking about making money off AI. We will get to the topic.
We're going to get to the topic. I promise you we will. I'm going to stop interjecting.
When we come back, no, I love the interjections. When we come back, we'll talk about bubbles, and then we'll get into some of the ways that you can play it.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
So bubbles. Clearly, when you think of bubble, what's the first bubble you think of?
.com.
Okay. I thought you were going to say tulips. That's the bubble that Wall Street folks always talk about.
Tulips?
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about. As in the flower? No, it's got to be something else.
Yeah.
And I only say that because tulips are literally my favorite flower.
Yeah.
They're so simple. They're so classic. I will take tulips over roses any day. They're just beautiful flowers. So I'm convinced you must be talking about something else.
No, in the 1600s, during the Dutch Golden Age.
How old do you think I am, Adam?
No, like people always talk about the tulip bubble that happened during tulip mania, when single tulip bulbs were selling for more than 10 times the annual income of like the florists.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but I mean, basically tulips got introduced to Europe from the Ottoman Empire, and they were so beautiful and exotic and different from the flowers that were, you know, prevalent in Europe that they became a status symbol of the Dutch elite. And these tulips, because they were so different, they had beautiful stripes patterns, and you know, they like people wanted them, and the bulbs became really, really valuable, and people started to invest their life savings and selling their homes to buy tulip bulbs, and they thought that the price would just keep rising, and then eventually by 1637, shortly thereafter, people stopped buying them and they crashed and people lost everything messing with tulips. You never heard this story before.
I never heard it. Like, yeah. I'm reading literally on Investopedia right now, and I'm blown away. I can't wait to jump into this.
Okay.
Because I love a good tulip.
Yeah.
But they were also saying they were like status symbols because they were so, said this, different than all the other native flowers. So people started.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you weren't balling unless you had a tulip collection.
So here's how bubbles typically happen. There's a breakthrough technology that emerges. It reaches some amount of commercial scale where it's widely available. New companies flood the market with new capital going into that space. There's so much speculation that the valuation of those companies starts to rise. Eventually, the bubble bursts because the valuations get way too high. But the technology is typically solid, and it typically will have a second cycle where the actual value gets created. Like, that's exactly what happened with the internet. And I imagine it happened with tulips as well.
Yeah. People probably started borrowing to buy tulips, thinking they would just pay off the loan after they made their money. But then the money didn't come in, and then couldn't pay the loan. Short. Like, yeah.
And if you borrow money from a loan shark, like the one on Good Times, what's his name, Sweetness, then...
Sweet Daddy Williams.
Sweet Daddy Williams, then you got a problem. So the people that think there's a bubble in AI are pointing out the fact that there's high valuations, right? So if you look at the stocks that are focused on artificial intelligence, on average, they're trading at a higher price to earnings multiple than the stocks that are not. Like that's definitely prevalent right now. I wouldn't say the valuations are nuts though, but they're just higher. Next, overexcitement. Right? Like it's all anybody wants to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Like you remember being in taxi cabs in 2000 and your taxi driver's telling you about the next internet startup that's going to be big.
Or fast forward to today, you're in an Uber or some other rideshare and it's same but different conversation.
Yeah.
It's all the AI companies.
And then finally, it's major AI startups like OpenAI and Anthropic, which are actually losing substantial amounts of money. Their costs are significantly higher than their revenues. And it's because, like, anytime there's a new technology like this, it requires a lot of R&D or a lot of capital. And OpenAI is a private company. So in order for it to get capital, it needs to raise it from investors. And you can't lose money but for so long before it's game over after a while. So now we'll play devil's advocate. I know you always say devil doesn't need an advocate, but what are some arguments against a bubble, right?
I've literally never said that, but I probably thought it. I've never said those words. But anyway, I'm churchy, so it's fine that you would think that I would. But I will now.
So the first I'll point out is like Microsoft, NVIDIA, Alphabet. Like these companies are making so much more money than they were making before AI. And like I can tell you specifically for a stock like NVIDIA, and again, we never endorse a specific company, but like if you look at its revenue growth, its profit growth, like it has deserved every penny of its multiple, every penny of its stock price appreciation.
Listen, we're not making recommendations here, but I will tell you that I own it.
Yeah.
And I, within reason, all of my clients own it.
Yeah.
They may not own it outright, but if they own an equity fund of any kind, it's probably in there.
Yeah,
and it's some of the largest.
Yeah, NVIDIA is the largest company in America. Its market cap exceeds $4 trillion with a T. Like,
Yeah.
And not that long ago, it was not even a $1 trillion company.
Right.
And the company's really earned that with its revenue growth. The second argument against the bubble is that it is a transformative technology with a significant long-lasting potential. It's not a fad. I do believe that this is true. It's not a fad. And then finally, people look at the macroeconomic environment and the Fed policies, which right now interest rates are very high.
Mm-hmm.
Right back then, interest rates were low in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And so folks are saying, no, it's not a bubble because like, look at what the Fed's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but I still want us to make money from this. So let's talk about the phases of AI. So this is according to Goldman Sachs. So they say that phase one was just NVIDIA. Like, this was ground zero for AI. Phase two is AI infrastructure. This is when you start to invest in companies that will benefit from the continued build out of AI. So this would be semiconductor designers, manufacturers, cloud providers, network equipment makers, et cetera, data centers. And we'll talk a lot about data centers today.
Yes.
Then we get to AI enabled revenue. This would be companies that are using AI to make money. Think like Salesforce, think Adobe, think Alphabet, which, you know, these are companies that are paying, like I pay a premium membership for my Gemini access, right? Like that's enabled revenue. And then finally the AI productivity gains. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of companies in all sorts of industries make money from productivity enhancements. So let's dive deeper now into kind of like the phase two, right? That infrastructure of AI. We've got to talk about data centers.
Yeah.
Yeah, data centers really are the toll booth of AI. So when I say toll booth, it's like, you know, literally, you know, there's a bunch of cars driving on the turnpike or whatever highway, and they got to stop to pay their toll, and that's how you make money. Like, that's what the data center is in the AI infrastructure.
Yeah, I guess if you think about it, there has to be a physical facility that has all the stuff in it, right? The servers, mm-hmm. the storage systems, the equipment. You've got to distribute all of that data somehow. And so there's hubs that require certain temperature conditions. You know, it can't be too hot or it can't be too cool. You've got to have high security. You know, there's just, we're driving past them every day.
Yeah, that's a fact. And they're changing because 5 years ago, they were just storing files, running software.
Mm-hmm.
Today, a data center is kind of like an AI super factory. It's running advanced AI workloads. It's working around the clock. And you mentioned it's consuming like a significant amount of energy and electricity as well. Which again, that a second theme of AI is electricity.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing for the first time in a long time an increase in the use of electricity because we have so many different appliances that are so efficient that we're using, on average, less and less electricity from the new appliances that we get. But now we're seeing an uptick. And again, I want to make some money.
Yeah.
So I want to be focused on where things are headed.
that creates a dilemma for environmentally conscious investors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe, right?
Yeah, no, for
because
sure.
Because are we evening things out? Maybe using more efficient appliances in our homes, but how does that compare to what's required to operate a data center?
Yeah.
Like, is it evening out or is it going the other way?
Yeah, I mean, look.
But you want to make money too.
Yeah, folks that care about the environment need to be paying attention to the fact that these tech companies are like huge carbon producers.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy to keep these data centers cool. And a lot of them are in warm places. Like Silicon Valley is not chilly. Like it's warm out there. So what are some of the companies that are in the data center arena? Amazon Web Services, owned by Amazon. This is the leading provider of public cloud services. Microsoft Azure. What do you say? Azure? Dijon mustard?
Azure sounds more...
Black. There's definitely a kid out there named Azure. So Microsoft Azure.
I was going to say sexy, but you know, black sexy, it's all good.
Okay, same thing. Synonym. That's Microsoft's public cloud computing platform. Google Cloud Platform is Google's suite of cloud computing services. And there's Meta Platforms, which operates an extensive data center network for its social media programs. And finally, Alibaba Cloud, which is a major player in Asia.
So it's all the big players,
yeah.
Basically.
This is why when we think about the Magnificent Seven, these stocks that really dominate the stock market today, it's a lot of these big mega cap tech companies. Because the thing about these companies is that—
Mega, not MAGA.
Yeah, mega cap, MEGA,
just correct. Just for clarity, that's all.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're making gobs of money and they're public companies, which mm-hmm. means that they can sell shares to raise even more capital.
Yeah.
Like they've got the money that it takes to really invest in research and development. Like that's why they're at the forefront of the infrastructure of AI.
That's right.
Other data center plays. You got co-location data centers, also known as colos.
Tell me more about that.
So this is a facility where a business can lease space for its own servers. So rather than owning the whole building myself, I can say, okay, look, let me just take 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 square feet, and I'm going to use this little space from my data center.
I feel like that is happening right here in our building.
Right next door to where we're recording.
That's why our power keeps going out. Circuit breakers keep tripping.
There's a black-owned company that's right there. Have you seen them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they got it.
It's happening right here
in our
building.
It looks like the Matrix in there.
Yeah. That might be why our office is so cold.
Mm-hmm.
Causing us to have to turn on space heaters.
I didn't think about that.
It's all related.
I did not think about that.
This is why
all summer
I will only come into the office in the winter.
All summer, our whole staff has been running space heaters in our office because it's cold and we have a co-location data center across.
Not our whole staff.
Yeah. Okay.
If I am included in staff.
Okay. Not those who have a personal summer. Let's just say that.
I came in today and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we get chilly. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is that is what's happening in this building.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it.
Yep. In a colo situation, you own the hardware, you lease the space, the provider handles the facility, and you get your connectivity. So the building provides a certain level of web connectivity to the internet.
I was about to say our building owner's name.
Yeah.
But go ahead and make your money.
So what are some companies in the colo and infrastructure space? You got Equinix, publicly traded company. They are the leading co-location data center provider. Digital Realty is another. NTT Global Data Centers. CyrusOne. Cyrus, I always think of the Kevin Hart joke when he says his dad is talking to Siri, talking about Cyrus.
I haven't heard that, but that's hilarious already.
American Tower. They have a business called CoreSight. Iron Mountain. You know what's funny? Iron Mountain is the one that deal with the paper. Like,
yeah.
I was always like, how is this company making money? Like, this seems like a scam.
They are pivoting.
Yeah, they really are.
They got the paper on one side and they got the
Do you think they really have all that paper, Iron Mountain?
I don't know. Have you ever had to
retrieve something?
I have had to in my career,
they had
but
them?
not in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet you they've lost a bunch of that stuff. I bet you it's been eaten by rats.
We should try it. We should just, well, we wouldn't.
You know, one of my clients, they just like fired their financial advisory team to hire us. And she, we uncovered that she had been paying Iron Mountain for storage for these documents for years. And she requested that the documents, she was going to request that they send the documents. But I'm like, yo, if you haven't needed these documents in the last 10 years, like, I'm pretty sure you could have them destroyed.
Well, they do. Yeah, they do. There's record retention rules.
Yeah.
And after like 7 years, I think they can destroy them.
Yeah.
Iron Mountain can destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be the one that's looking for documents that's like 6.5 years old and just be like.
Just at the threshold.
Put up or shut up. Put up or pay up.
Do you have a lot of papers in your house?
I have more than I would like.
Yeah?
Yeah.
File cabinet or just piled up?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in our office, we used to have big file cabinets with all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, we just was like, we don't need this anymore.
Yeah,
like,
I
all
mean,
the stuff
scan
is digital.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stuff is maintained digitally.
Digitally signed.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But so, remember, I moved my practice during a pandemic where we were home. So I don't want to say too much, but when places started shutting down, we were supposedly, where I was working at the time, was moving to a team A, team B. Team A is going to be in 1 week. Mm-hmm. And team B will be, so they could space us out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, let me take some of these files home.
Yeah.
Because You can't take that stuff with you if you leave as an advisor. You can't take client files. Yeah. You can't take digital data with you.
But while you were working there, you needed your files.
I needed my files. Yeah. So,
very convenient.
You know, my most important clients,
yeah.
I needed to be able to work with those files.
Okay.
On the weeks that I was not going to be in the office. But All right. immediately went from a team A and B approach to stay at home.
And you shredded those files since then?
I have not shredded those files since then. I have scanned some of those files.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are here, are under lock and key here in our office.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right, good. So we do not have a data breach, it sounds like.
We
right,
do
good.
Not have a data breach, yes.
All right, I was like, making sure.
Let me be clear about
making
that.
Making sure. So other themes. So we talked about data centers, co-location centers. Another one is energy. So a lot of energy is being consumed. So to train GPT-4, which is the next iteration of ChatGPT, OpenAI used approximately 50 gigawatt hours of electricity, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's how much it would take to power 6,000 homes in America for an entire year. And that was 50 times more electricity than they used in training its previous versions.
That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. So there's a chart we're looking at that I wish I could like stream to your brain. Just imagine this for a minute, but it's
like that's not far away.
Yeah.
That capability is probably coming very soon.
Like, oh, you want to see this? Boom. There you go. It's in your brain. You got it?
I mean.
Yeah. So energy consumption per query. So Google search takes about 1/3 of a watt hour. ChatGPT, a search or a query on ChatGPT takes about 3.
Wow.
So really like 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
An AI-powered Google search takes about 7 watt hours, which is like, that'd be like 14 times the energy consumed by a regular Google search.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about that, the AI-powered Google searches are thrust upon us. When you Google search something now,
oh yeah,
the AI one,
the AI
is right there. Result. Like, I didn't ask for this. I kind of feel guilty about using it personally.
Yeah.
Like, when we did our show in 2023, it was like one ChatGPT search is like something like 14,000 cups of coffee being heated up or some crazy number. I'm like, oh, wow. I feel guilty about using it.
Yeah.
But like as a...
So maybe I should have just answered my son's question and instead of telling him to go look it up.
I mean, if you care about the environment, like I don't know if you do. So another theme though, if you want to be profiting off of AI and what's to come, then you need some investments in electricity, utility stocks.
Yeah.
Right? These companies haven't been growing in a long time, but like this is material.
For fear of being perceived as making a recommendation, I use an ETF.
Yeah.
That invests in data facilities.
Yeah.
So I don't have to pick them myself.
That's good. And we'll talk about that after the break. We'll get into some vehicles.
Yep.
But yeah, these electricity companies should be a part of that consideration of the ecosystem of AI for sure.
Business idea for you. We buy a commercial building and we make it a colo.
Okay. I like it.
We're in a prime area to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Some of these corporate buildings that are not being used in that way.
Yeah.
You put up the capital.
Okay.
And we'll figure out how I make money from it.
Okay. And we call it Momentum Colocation Services.
Probably all kinds of conflicts there, but
I love it.
And we kind of think about
it. And on that note, since we're doing it, why not have some wind turbines and do some renewable energy?
There you go.
As another source.
There you go.
Make it green.
Make that green.
That's it.
And make it green. So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some investment vehicles for your consideration. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom. It's leading to the North Star.
And we're back. We've launched Momentum Colocation Services with wind and solar electricity being produced.
Yep, just during the break.
The IPO will launch by year end. Okay. See your financial advisor for access to those shares.
There you go.
I'm joking, of course.
Of course.
So you were talking about the ways that you're playing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned an ETF. So let's talk, what is an ETF for folks that don't know ETFs?
Well, the acronym is for Exchange Traded Funds. It's basically, think of ETFs like mutual funds. It's pools of investments where you can invest in a variety of different companies. So you have some diversification, but you're really focused on a particular sector, theme, like that.
So it simply means it's a fund that trades on an exchange, which means that it has a different price every second of every day, just like a stock does.
Yep.
Typically, ETFs have a lower cost because they're passive, even though they might be focused on a specific niche.
They track to an index.
Yeah, it's passive, meaning you don't have someone typically in there picking stocks for you.
The way you do in a mutual fund.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so ETFs are a great way to get some diversification, but also to focus your money in on a theme like AI. And by the way, always do your own research.
Yes.
Always understand that as smart as Andrea and I are, we don't know you and your personal financial situation, and we cannot and will not and are not making an investment recommendation to you at this time.
That's right.
But we want you to know what's out there, so that you can figure out if it makes sense for you. And any of these things, like, you never want to go crazy with any of this stuff. Like, we're not saying, hey, shift 80% of your portfolio into these things. But like, yo, do a little bit of research. Ask your advisor, like, hey, to what extent am I taking advantage of AI? I want to make sure I don't miss this. So some of the ETFs that are focused, I'll just give you a couple. These are the biggest ones. There's a fund called the Global X Artificial Intelligence and Tech ETF. There's the Defiance Quantum ETF. There's the WisdomTree Artificial Intelligence. So a lot of times it's got the name right in the, like, the marketing of it has the name of AI right in the name.
That's right.
Now I'll tell you which ones have performed the best this year. Again, past performance is not indicative of future results. So I'm not saying go buy these.
Right.
I'm just telling you what has happened so far. No guarantee you'll make these same returns. In fact, I know you won't make these same returns if you buy them now. But ARC Autonomous Tech and Robotics ETF, that's by Kathy Wood, woman-owned company.
That's right.
It's up a lot this year. Defiance Quantum, up a lot. So there's a lot of different ETFs you can get into that, to Andrea's point, will do the work of picking the stocks for you.
That's right.
Where you don't have to pick them yourself.
Can I throw one in here?
Please do.
So one of the ones I'm using, and this speaks to the investor who wants to see some growth okay. from this technology and investment in the technology, but also cares a little bit about the environment. I've been using one called, where the ticker is GRID. It really focuses on investments in companies that are really involved in the smart grid and electric energy infrastructure okay. sector. Okay. So if there's some investment and some attention being paid to doing things cleaner, smarter.
I like that.
So it's kind of bringing together.
So like Momentum Colo could be in that. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I guess we could. So yeah. anyway, it's doing pretty well.
Yeah. Good. So beyond ETFs, I mean, clearly there's mutual funds where the managers have a tech bias, or they might have a mandate to go out and give you an AI theme to their investment portfolio. I will say with mutual funds, though, like in an ETF world, you'll often find it in the name.
Yeah.
In mutual fund world, maybe not. Like they may just call it like the growth fund
right.
or the tech fund. You know what I'm saying? Like it may not say
AI. It's not so obvious.
Yeah, so it might take a little bit of digging for sure. But I will say, if you own the S&P 500, which is the largest 500 companies in America, like you own NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, Alphabet, which is Google, like you own a lot of these companies
That's right.
already. So let's talk about some other companies beyond those big seven that are involved in AI. You've got companies like Broadcom, which is involved in semiconductor design and manufacturing, ServiceNow, which is enterprise and infrastructure software, Oracle.
Yeah.
Oracle just had a crazy week last week. I think they were up like 15% in one day.
More than that. They were up like 30% in one day.
Yeah.
Like you just don't hear that. That kind of stuff concerns me because it's so, I'm not going to say it's nonsensical, but it's so out of character
mm-hmm.
for a company of that size to have that kind of movement without a real obvious trigger.
Yeah. Well, they did have a trigger. Like they basically, like for some companies, they weren't really profiting from AI yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Oracle is one of those companies that pivoted. They started getting more involved in AI and it made their revenue jump way more than expected.
Well, okay, that's fair. What I'm saying though is it didn't seem commensurate with
how much it went up.
Yeah. That just doesn't happen that
euphoria.
Often. But you gotta be in it. I'd love to see where it is in, you know, 30 to 90 days. But
yeah.
Hey, if you were an owner and you got in before that happened,
yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You've got AMD, Advanced Micro Devices. You know, they're really involved in semiconductor design and manufacturing. Salesforce, which I have a bias for, not so much as a stock, although I do own it. But, you know.
Yeah. CRM.
It was the CRM that I came up in the industry. So.
Yeah. And then you've got some non-US companies like Alibaba.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Tencent Holdings. These are both Chinese companies.
Yeah.
You've got Samsung, which is from Taiwan.
Palantir?
Well, Palantir is an American company.
Okay.
And they've got a black CEO. So we're rocking with Palantir.
Must.
One thing I loved about, like Trump recently was talking about the innovations from America. And
mm-hmm.
did you notice every single innovation that he named was invented by a black person?
Does that exist in a meme or something? Because I want to put that out there.
Yeah. I'm sure it does. That's where I found it, was on social media somewhere.
I need that in a meme. I need to post that on my story.
Yeah.
No, not on my story, because that disappears. Just.
But like stories, like, gets more attention, even though it disappears.
Sometimes they do. Yeah.
So, speaking of innovations, what is the future of AI? What is next? Like, what are the things that you want to make sure that you are paying attention to as it rolls out so you can, again, position your investment portfolio to make sure you're taking advantage of these things? The first one I'll talk about is physical AI.
Mm-hmm.
Physical AI is a type of AI that involves equipment, autonomous systems like robots and self-driving cars, sensors and actuators to perceive, reason, and act in a physical environment. So unlike digital-only AI, which no one calls it that, but that's kind of what we're experiencing now,
mm-hmm.
physical AI is enabling machine learning, to adapt and execute complex tasks in real time. So examples of physical AI would be robotics, autonomous cars, self-driving cars. We're seeing those. Have you been seeing those self-driving cars?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, stay away from me. I read a story
it's
about
all the rage in San Francisco. Did I take one? I feel like I took one in San Francisco.
There was somebody trapped in a parking lot and the car just kept going.
It kept circling.
In circles. Yeah. And it couldn't, I guess it was glitching because it couldn't access the internet for a second. I'm cool on that. healthcare, robotic surgical devices to physically assist surgeons and patients. Smart spaces. These are intelligent environments that can perceive and respond to human activity. I wonder if you call that Amazon store, the one without the cashier, is that a smart space? I wonder.
It sounds like it would be.
I went into one for the first time recently.
I don't know if I can.
I was just like the SNL skit. Like, did you see the one with Kenan Thompson? He's like, I'm buying this. I got it in my hand. Like, I walked out holding that thing up. I was like, yo, I did not steal this.
Right, right. Crazy.
The next one, quantum computing. And I will tell you, like, I've read this stuff a bunch of times. I don't fully, like, understand it that well, but I'll try to like break down quantum computing. So classical computing, it calculates with transistors, which can represent either zeros or ones, but quantum computing is about qubits and they can be zeros and ones at the same time. Like,
it sounds like cryptocurrency, right? If we think about the digital wallets, like, aren't the, I don't even know what to call it. I'm losing the language for these different things, but the zeros and ones, the alpha.
Yeah, binary.
Yeah, like, this sounds like that.
Yeah, but qubits can be zeros and ones at the same time. I guess it's like a non-binary computer, like, I guess.
So we've gone in our educational and professional lifetimes from widgets to qubits.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Remember cost accounting? Everything was a widget.
Yeah.
No, it's not widgets anymore. It's qubits.
So classical computers need low room temperatures. Quantum computers need ultra cold room temperatures, which again goes back to this electricity theme. The more folks are doing quantum computing, the more it's going to be a stress on the electric grid. Ding! Okay. And then finally, classic computing is for everyday things that are using regular computers and handheld cell phones. Quantum computing is well suited for optimization problems, data analysis, and simulations. Qubits, word of the day.
Qubits.
Yeah. So one example, Google said that it ran a calculation on a quantum computer in just a few minutes that would have taken a regular computer 10,000 years to complete.
Oh.
Later on, a little bit more than a year later, a Chinese team took that same equation, that same calculation, and ran it in 200 seconds, and it would have taken an ordinary computer, we already said, 10,000 years. So we're talking about billions times faster.
Yeah.
Quantum computing. And finally, we have agentic AI or AI agents. And this refers to fully autonomous software capable of understanding user inputs and executing complex tasks independently. So unlike a traditional chatbot that is limited to short-term goals, you know, really basic things, AI agents can complete long tasks on their own. So like, I'll give you an example. I was with one of my good friends. He's an influencer. He writes like ebooks and has masterclasses and all this stuff. And he's saying he's working on an AI agent that would replicate him. And so you can interact with him virtually where you could ask him questions and he's answering you using his own type of talk, like his own language, his own knowledge base.
I've always said I needed a clone.
Yeah. So we could clone you.
Agent Dre.
That's a scary thought.
That is productivity enhancement.
Yeah. It's coming.
I mean,
it's coming. The crazy thing as we wrap up this conversation about making money from AI, we've talked mostly about public companies today.
Yeah.
A lot of the investment that's going into AI,
it's on the private side,
it's happening in the venture capital world.
Yeah.
And by the time it goes public, much of the money will have been made already.
Yeah.
And there's thousands of private AI-based companies that are out here fundraising. We have no idea which ones are going to make it or not.
And that's why, you know, on the one hand, you can look at that and say, wow, the rich just keep getting richer, which is true. At the same time, it's also why it's important to access what you can.
Yeah.
Right? So some of the things that we're talking about outside of the private markets are accessible by all of us in some form.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, if you don't have enough money to eat or to have shelter, that's a different conversation. Yeah. But we should all be thinking about how we can optimize for whatever we're comfortable with, some of these opportunities, whether it's the investment in it, whether it's using it to enhance our own productivity in whatever work or careers we have. If you don't adopt it in some level, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah.
That's just the reality.
So bottom line, while that is true, while everything you said is true, you have to be diversified. Like, you can't only be invested in AI stuff.
Absolutely.
As much as we think AI is a big part of the future, it's not the only part of the future.
That's right.
Next, you really want to understand your risks and understand that just because the investment went up in the past,
right,
doesn't mean it's going to keep going up.
That's right.
In the future. You can argue that if it went up by a lot in the past, the future may be a lot worse.
Yeah.
You never know.
We just don't know.
And then finally, you got to look into the fundamentals of the business. Like, don't just buy it because it's got AI in the name.
That's right.
Like, dig into what the company's actually doing.
Yep.
And see if you can really understand it. Like, I personally don't invest in stuff I don't understand. Like, I just explained quantum computing in a way that I did not understand it.
Right.
Like, I'm not about to go out here and invest in a quantum computing fund.
That's right. I mean, we did a show. I think the title of the show was Know When to Hold 'Em.
Mm-hmm.
But in that show, we talked about how to evaluate the fundamentals of a company so that you can make the best buy-sell decision for yourself. Or if you are working with an advisor, so that you understand the rationale behind what the advisor is telling you to do or not to do.
Yeah.
So you cannot abandon the fundamentals for euphoria, excitement, the next big thing. Yeah. You will get burned eventually.
That's a fact.
But you can't sit on the sidelines idle.
Yeah.
Either.
So if you're an investor and you've got a retirement portfolio, a brokerage account, or any kind of investment account, and you want to talk to us about your investments, about your financial future, your retirement plan, et cetera, feel free to hit us up. Go to our website, momentum-advisors.com/contact. Go to the contact page, and you will schedule time with either me, Andrea, or both of us.
That's right.
We'll spend 30 minutes with you, kick the tires, and really help you to figure out if you're positioned properly for your financial future. No cost.
Complimentary.
And it won't be an AI agent either.
It will really be us.
It won't be Agent Dre, not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. I'll use her for the responding to the kids. I'll see how they like that.
Yeah, they're not going to like that.
I think they'll like it for some things, but for other things, they still want to talk to live mom.
They'll like the responsiveness that they get an instant answer from Agent Dre.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. We hope you'll keep listening. I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.